This episode of the Energy Stoners Cafe is sponsored by the Black Arts Matter Network, blackartsmatter.net. Welcome to the Energy Stoners Cafe. My name is Toni Quest, and I'm really happy that you're here. I like to interview the most interesting people I can find on the planet. So grab a cup of coffee, sit down, relax, and listen. You're going to find that these guests are so intriguing, you'll wonder why you didn't know about them before. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the Energy Stoners Cafe. I really appreciate that you come to the show, and I most appreciate that I can present to you some of the most interesting and, in my opinion, relevant people on our planet. Tonight, we're interviewing a great musician who I consider a friend of mine. He's also a friend of the show. And I'm going to let you know in advance, I like to do this, of what you're going to be listening to so you can listen to the end. We're going to talk about what the experience has been for people within the arts during the global pandemic. No doubt that it's actually affected everybody if they're actually living and they're not living under their particular rock, has affected us all. And I want to talk to this particular gentleman about it because he's very prominent in the music industry locally and globally. His name is Ray Blue. He's a jazz musician, which is all very close to my heart. Anybody that knows that, jazz is very close to my heart. As the legend goes, I was conceived to jazz. And so jazz musicians definitely speak to my heart. So I'm introducing to you Ray Blue. He's also the founder of the Cross-Cultural Connection with regard to the arts. He works with young people. He works with older people. And he's an excellent musician. And he's able to stir up a crowd with music. So welcome to the show, Ray.
Thank you so much, Toni. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
Yes, it's our pleasure. Now, the last time I interviewed you was on my TV show, Talk with TQ, and it got a lot of traction. People still talk to me about that particular interview. But this time, you know, some time has passed. The world has changed quite a bit. And I need to ask you, how has the global pandemic, and I'll also say the Black Lives Matter movement, affected the music industry, and how has it affected you with regard to your music business and your endeavors with the cross-cultural connection?
Well, I'll begin with the pandemic. We've all had to just stop. Everything had to stop. All performances, all personal contact, etc. Everything has stopped. Prior to the pandemic, we were, as a musician, I was working. In fact, I was on tour. I was in Europe when the shutdown came, so everything had canceled in March. I got three dates in, three performances, and then I was in Berlin, and then it shut down. Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, the last gig was the 13th of March. On the 16th, I was on a plane, fortunately, back to the States, and I laid low the whole time. It was a bit much to wrap my head around at first, because everything, and I had a new record out. I had tours set up, the whole thing, and that had to be put on hold.
Wow.
But see, as an artist, a difficult part is not being able to interact face-to-face or together with other artists.
Yeah.
We've had to do everything at home, and then there's some virtual stuff. So all that changed. All that changed. And so there was an emotional thing to handle, but well, the main thing is that we keep moving forward.
Tell me about the emotional part of it. Because, you know, I'll be transparent. I think the audience knows I'm an artist. I'm a visual artist. But I do have a lot of collaboration with all kinds of artists, from literary, musical. Tell the audience the emotional component for you to this pandemic as an artist.
Isolation.
Yeah.
Isolation is a difficult thing to cope with. In addition to that, you know, we showed a lot of phone calls. We're in touch with one another. Everyone's in the same situation, so we keep, you know, we keep it moving forward. I did a lot of practicing, you know, to stay on top of that. The hard part is the isolation, not being able to interact personally and to play with other musicians. That's loosened up. in terms of my 501c3, our jazz education organization, well, we were holding weekly workshops with our students, and that had to stop. So we're seeing students online, on Zoom.
How is that working out?
Well, individually, fine. It's a difficult thing to have a group, because the technology isn't set up for that yet, for that to be effective. But necessity is the mother of invention, so I'm sure that'll come about pretty soon. But there was a big change. It was a big change in that.
So talk to us a little bit about the cross-cultural connection and how it's really affected that particular entity, which you're involved in. It's yours. You and your beautiful wife, Rita, you actually are co-founders of the cross-cultural connection, from what I understand. So tell me how it's affected that.
It affected primarily just the workshop component. That's the concept of promoting jazz culture and education and performances. That's our mission. But what it affected was the weekly workshops. You know, they're bringing the students together on a weekly basis. But what we've been doing is meeting online individually. And so we keep that piece going.
Tell us about the history of the cross-cultural connection, because some people know about it, some people don't, but I know that it's worth talking about and sharing with this audience.
I started it back in 2005, 2004. Actually, I was on tour and I was in South Africa, and I was there for a festival. I was there for the North Sea Festival and then again for the Mukufe Festivals. And I was asked to do some workshops with some students from the townships. And it was great. It was amazing. Mm-hmm. You know, they were so receptive of it. From that, I was invited to come to some of the townships. You know, I got different offers to do more. And it grew from there. So what I had done was, each time I would go on tour, I would teach. I would hold workshops. And I decided that, well, this is, I want to continue this. You know, I want to be able to bring this concept of jazz to young people so that they learn the history and the actual learning of the music and playing your instruments. And how it brings us all together historically as well. So that's how it started. And then I actually set it up officially in Iowa. In Cedar Rapids, Iowa.
Wow. Who would have thought? I never would have guessed.
Yeah, South Africa to Cedar Rapids, Iowa.
Did you get some corn? There are corn fields over there. That's what I know about Iowa.
Well, there's corn fields and there's soybean fields and et cetera. My history in Iowa, I went to college in Iowa. I got my graduate degree from the University of Iowa. I went to William Penn University, a liberal arts college there, and then went to grad school at the university.
What was that like, being a Black man in the Midwest? Nas, I have to ask.
No, I understand. I've been asked that kind of thing before.
An awesome Black man in the Midwest. How's that?
You know, I wasn't the only Black person in the state of Iowa.
Oh.
There are a lot of colleges in that state. A lot of people of color go to school out there from different cities from all around the country. You know, and I got an excellent education there.
I'm really glad to hear that. It's obvious to anyone who meets you, aside from your huge heart, you know, it's obvious, at least to me. I shouldn't say anyone, because I don't know everybody. So I'm always careful with my superfluous statements. But I'll say, to me, it was obvious that you're a highly educated person. And I want to also say to the audience that you're also a social worker by profession.
Yeah, well, I'm a professor musician too, but I got my graduate degree in clinical social work.
Yes.
At the University of Iowa, yeah. And I chose Iowa. I was accepted at Columbia and Syracuse as well for graduate school, but they paid for everything.
Oh, wow.
You know, they wanted students of color to go to school out there. The scholarships they were offering at Columbia and Syracuse were not as bountiful. And I did my research, and it was a very good school. Mm-hmm. I had a mentor who was phenomenal, a Black woman who had personally taken my application under her wing, and I had her as my supervisor and mentor, and I couldn't have had a better person. Now, there were other great professors, for sure, but my experience with her was unique and just what I needed.
And just what they needed.
Yeah, well, that too. But I definitely needed Louise Mays. And at that stage of in my life, in my education, in my personal and professional development, she made sure that I learned the right way. And it's not talked about a lot. You know, we talked about institutional racism and all. Mm-hmm. She pointed out things. And there are a lot of our students of color who come out of high school deficient in a lot of areas, and they've been allowed to be deficient. They weren't corrected. And there were some things that, and she made sure mine got corrected. It was pointed out how all of that works. You know, I was grateful for her.
I'm grateful for her too, because she brought you she helped you to galvanize your career so we could all enjoy who you are.
And thank you. Thank you. I came out of grad school and didn't work in psychiatric settings. I did that work along with music and studying more music for maybe 5 years, 4 or 5 years. And then I switched over to music, you know, playing music. I started a program, almost music therapy. I started developing music programs in special education and schools. And also taking on private students. I did those kinds of things. And I love the idea of teaching. I was asked to, this is a wonderful story, a lady named Beatrice Morgan. She's the mother of actress Debbie Morgan.
Yes, I know that.
And she lived in White Plains, and she was working in the Tuckahoe School District. Well, I was working in a special act district for school social worker for a foster boarding agency, special ed. And she asked me to take her place on a panel for a discussion around black males, bringing them out of that dilemma of perpetual failures. And I happened to be sitting next to the dean from the Brown Manhattan Community College, who had a program called the Black Men's Black Women's Initiative. It was an immersion program. So Dean Richard Jones, he asked me right there, he hired me then, would you like to be in our program? So that started the component of my career of teaching in college, in the university level. I taught in CUNY as an adjunct for 8 years. Uh-huh. And I also taught sociology and academic skills at Mercy College as well. And I'm doing all this while I'm playing music and traveling and all this stuff. And it was great.
I can appreciate the fact that you taught sociology on a college level. I did the same. And a lot of people don't see artists as doing things like that, you know, writing theses about such things and how that really relates to what you do as a musician and as an educator and as someone that understands the importance of counseling a community, even if it's of a few students or a lot of students or what. Do you find that that integrates into your creative life?
Absolutely. Absolutely. All that we've experienced and learned, you know, it translates into the person that we are as a whole. I didn't go to college to become a teacher. I didn't study education in college. I studied sociology and psychology and psychiatry. That's what I studied. But college is about learning how to learn. As a psychotherapist, I was teaching people how to educate themselves on how to handle their life situations. So I was a teacher. So, you know, I drew from the experiences I've had as a student with teachers that, you know, people who taught me that were, you know, made an impression on me. And I put all those things together. And I believe I'm a very effective educator.
I believe you are too, Ray.
I really enjoy it. I really enjoy it. And so with that, I studied also with regard to the music. I studied at the Jazzmobile rather than studying in the university, music in the university. Jazzmobile was set up by Dr. Billy Taylor and Jimmy Heath. And it was set up for people in Harlem and anyone else who wanted to be a part of their program to get a quality jazz education for less money than university. And all of the teachers were the cats that made the records. They were the guys, they were the men and women who played the music. I had great teachers there too. I went through that program as well. So, and I'm still studying. I'm still actively studying with George Coleman, with Dr. Barry Harris. I studied with Paul Jeffries, who was with Thelonious Monk, Dizzy Gillespie. He ran the jazz department at Rutgers and then went down and took over for Mary Lou Williams at Duke University, the jazz studies program down there. Paul was one of my dear friends and mentors. Benny Golson is a dear friend, the great saxophone player and composer. You know, and there are others out there who, you know, who I still continue to learn from. It's a lifelong learning process.
Talk to me about the emotional and psychological, but mostly the emotional component to being a social worker and a music teacher. Not everybody is a creative, and not every creative does every single thing. What I've noticed about musicians, singers in particular, and also the saxophone sounds like a voice to me, but singers in particular, there's an emotional component and there's something they can draw upon inside of them that galvanizes their voice in a way that they can affect some change within themselves as they're singing. And what I've noticed is how music can affect an emotional change in the listener. And how do you integrate those things when you're actually counseling and or teaching someone?
For the musical part, number one, whether it be vocalists or instrumentalists, we're all storytellers. And we draw from our life experiences and things that we've learned and how we present ourselves. The counseling part, well, that was, you know, I had a passion for that as well. People and music are my passion. Music is a conduit, relating to others, relating information, relating our affect, our feelings to others. You know, there's a cognitive affective thing, what we think and feel gets translated into our expression. And the important thing with counseling, the important thing with music, what draws us to an artist and what they do is that they are believable.
Oh.
It's trust. And that's what life is about and relationships are about. It's about trust. Learning to develop trust, trust ourselves, and allowing, helping others to be able to trust us. That's how we communicate effectively.
I was going to ask you, have you ever discovered in your teaching endeavors, that especially with the music, that you come across a diamond in the rough?
Sure.
I know that it's happened with singers are just often discovered by teachers when they all of a sudden just open their mouth and start to sing.
Mm-hmm.
I guess with an instrument, have you ever found someone to just pick up an instrument and the talent and the motivation, but the motivation's there, but the talent is just there and all of a sudden it just springs forth?
Well, talent has to be developed. You can have basic talent. You can have good, you can have innate talent, but it has to be nurtured and developed. You can hear someone sing and they have a nice voice, but to develop that voice, it takes work. It takes work and commitment from the person, from that person. If you want to sing in the church choir or just sing, just be a singer, that's fine.
It has to be cultivated. It's true. You know, because so often I think when you get to a certain age, when you're someone that isn't really officially in that, I wonder what would have happened had I been able to stick to my piano lessons the way I was told instead of deviating from that. But so you find that as a therapist, do you ever use the music? Like if you find that someone has a voice, could cultivating that voice or that talent to play an instrument in them, could it have a positive, what kind of effect would it have on them emotionally, psychologically, and in their life?
Well, it all depends on the choices that the person wants to make. Life is about choices. Not everybody wants or needs to be a professional musician or a well-skilled musician. If a person has music in their life, I think they're blessed.
Yeah, I agree with that.
We're not all here to do the same thing. Everybody has a gift, and I think it's important for a person to follow whatever that gift is. I think it's also important that we enjoy several things that we like. But it's all about choices. It's all about choices. That's the short of it. Talk about diamonds in the rough. Some of the kids in the workshop, I got some very talented kids. I have one kid who is at the University of Colorado Boulder studying music. So I have one who this year is going in as a freshman to the University of North Texas, with one of the top jazz programs in the country. But this young man was also accepted at Eastman at Purchase, at NYU, McGill in Montreal. He was accepted at every single college that he applied to.
Wow, good for him.
Yeah, and he had choices, but he applied himself. This young man worked hard. I had him for the last 2.5 years. I have another trombone player, a very bright young man. He's going to Binghamton, but he's going to major in economics. He's majoring in economics, but he'll study some trombone while he's there. You know, what he does after that, but he's another very talented one. Another young man I met, I was on a gig in Milwaukee. I did a workshop, and he was in the workshop, and I had a private lesson with him and invited him. He was 16 years old. So his dad came with him to the club where I was working. I let him sit in. He can play.
Wow.
Well, he's at NYU now. He's another real, real fine young guitar player. And they're growing. I have another youngster who I heard him play. He's at Ardsley High School. He's a freshman. He's going to do really well. He's in the program. Like, there's two other young people from, I don't have anybody from Peekskill.
Really?
No. I initially had a fine group from Peekskill, but after that, they don't want to study jazz.
Is it just young people that you work with? Have you ever worked with adults?
Oh, absolutely. It's an intergenerational program. I have adults. There are adults in the group as well.
How does it feel to know that you've had such a positive effect? I know firsthand, and I just want to see how you feel about it. When you see a student that you've worked with and you see something in them when you're working with them when they're young, and then they sort of evolve and grow into young adults, when you see that the successes that they have, that must be a great feeling.
It is nice. It is great to see. I had a 2-year residence at Putnam Valley High School with the jazz students. And I had a group from there in the CCC workshops. One of them, I took him to France for 2 weeks. We had 1 week at one conservatory and another week at another city. A real fine young person. He went to University of Tampa, and he studied nursing. He's a nurse now, but he's also still playing music. Yeah, he contacted me a few weeks ago. He wants to buy another horn, an extra horn.
Wow.
He plays alto sax, guitar, and he sings, and now he's going to start playing tenor as well. Tyreek Jackson, Dr. Tyreek Jackson, he was with us at the beginning here in Peekskill, and a bass player, and he's now a doctor of music.
Wow.
Yeah, he came and played at our jazz festival last year. It's great to see. And there's several more. They've done well.
Many feathers in your cap.
They're feathers in their cap. I look at it like that. I choose to be a little humble about that.
Humble, humble, humble.
It is a good feeling to see these young people, how they've grown. Because the important thing is, learning-wise, all skills are transferable. It's good to see that they've taken a serious interest in their personal growth. And that's what makes a person a success, putting the work into themselves. I'm really happy for that.
Yeah, I like the fact that you talk about the fact that there is some work involved in really mastering a musical instrument, whether it be your voice, brass instrument, or a violin, drums, whatever. Often you see people that think that they have the raw talent, and they play, but it's not the same. I hate to say it. I really do hate to say it. It's not the same as somebody who's been studied. With the drums, which seems so benign, but there are real drummers that are schooled and they actually read music. And then they're the ones that are just banging on it and they can keep a beat, but that doesn't mean that they're any good. It doesn't mean that they're bad either. Raw talent's good, but it's not everything. Would you agree to that?
Absolutely. That's a starting point. It's like anything else in life. It's a starting point. And from there, we have to be committed to grow.
Right.
To work at things, no matter what it is. You don't get to the top of your game by not working at it. And whatever that may be.
I appreciate what you're saying because I think it's so relevant, especially with regard to sort of addressing certain issues to people that aspire. The reason I'd asked you about teaching adults is because I think it's really important for people listening to this to know that lifelong learning is a real thing. Sometimes people get into things later in life or they fine-tune what they've already been doing.
Yes, there are adults in our workshops that decided that I want to start studying more. I want, you know, enjoy this. I want to do more with it. And they're doing it. I have a person 80 years old. He's 80.
80?
And still practicing every day. Yes. Yes. He played as a young person, then decided that he wanted to be involved in doing this on a regular basis. That's what he's doing. Yes.
That's a beautiful thing. It really is.
Yeah.
What I can say as an adult learning theorist myself is adults bring a lot of stuff to the plate. I actually love teaching adults because they have all this experience that they bring into the mix, and it happens sort of like unconsciously. It's like already in there and they don't even realize they're bringing that to the plate. I'm glad to see that you recognize those things as well.
Well, life experiences are valuable, and having an intergenerational program has a very high value in my opinion. Young people, they say, well, young people, they should just be with their age groups. And I don't buy that part because we all have something to bring to them. There's more to learn.
An old lady once told me, start making friends younger than yourself now while you're still young. Because when you get older and you try to make friends with younger people, they think you just want them to take care of you. And that might not necessarily be the case, but I think it's really important to, I noticed that you have a diverse following, very diverse following, and you also seem to have a diverse set of learners that you've touched.
Well, you know, it's a community. It's a family, you know. I look at it like this. We have people of all ages in our family. We have grandparents. We have aunts and uncles. We have cousins. We have brothers and sisters. We're all there, and we all learn from each other.
Do you take donations to your foundation?
Absolutely.
How can someone make a donation to you if they choose to? Because I think that it would be something very worthy. You know, if someone would give money to your foundation, you're doing really great work. How could they find it?
CCCjazz.org is our website, and you can go online and donate through PayPal.
Cross-cultural connection. So CCCjazz.org.
Yes, yes.
And so if someone goes to that site, I'll tell the audience, go to the site, and you'll be able to make a donation if you choose to, and it will go to a very good cause.
Yes, and it's tax deductible.
Tax deductible is good too. We like that.
Yes.
It's nice to know when you give money that you're contributing to something that's very worthwhile. And even if you don't know the actual person that's going to benefit from it, you can be assured that someone will benefit from it that actually needs what the organization provides. So what are the next steps for you with this organization? What do you aspire for this organization?
A couple of things. One, that we're going to maintain the workshops, the intergenerational workshop. But two other things. One is that we produce an annual jazz festival. Last year, we had Dr. Barry Harris. We had Kirk Lightsey. We had a Houston person. My band played. We had a big band. We had a 19-piece jazz big band that performed. Our student ensemble performed. It was at the Pisgah Riverfront. Very well attended. Sharif Abdul Salam was our MC. He's the jazz DJ at WKCR Radio.
Yes.
We were set for this year, but the virus came in, and that we're ramping up for 2021. We're raising money for the festival for that now.
Can you offer like some kind of advice to other artists that are listening? Because from my experience, I know what I'm doing in this pandemic, and I'm fine. But I do know some other artists that are not as galvanized or inspired by it. And sometimes what happens is like you've heard of writer's block. I know some artists that have just kind of come to a standstill. They're just so upset about what's going on. I mean, is there anything you can offer in terms of, from your experience, that you could tell them to galvanize other artists to get back and just use it as an opportunity to create?
Communicate with other artists.
Yeah.
We inspire each other.
We do.
And we have to get up and move. We can't rely on someone coming to get us. Get up and put on a mask and get out the door. Turn on the radio, listen to some good music. Turn on YouTube, listen to some inspiring music. Find out where musicians are playing, you know, because they're outdoor gigs. Saturday, I'll be at High Point Park in Harlem, 155th and Edgecombe Avenue. I'll be there from 6 to 9. I've been doing our CCC ensemble is going to be on Division Street on Thursday, August 6th from 6 to 9. I have another on August 15th. I'll be over on Esther Street with my quintet.
Nice.
From 6 to 9.
Right outside of the Bean Runner Cafe.
Right outside Bean Runner.
Yes, which is actually like a hub for jazz in Westchester.
Yes, it is.
I'm glad to see they're doing a street show out there. It's about time. I'm glad. You know, I guess by sort of compelled to with this virus, you have to reinvent yourself.
Yeah, there's music. Grant's Tune, there's a show every Wednesday night down there from 6 to 9. They're outdoor venues now, so we have to go. I don't know what it's going to look like when the weather gets cold, but right now, take advantage and get up and get out and get around the music and the people and the musicians, because it's also a social business.
Yes.
It's a social component to being a musician.
And tell the audience what you know about jazz being such a beloved discipline in terms of music and how, who it brings out. Jazz, and I've always found jazz brings out people that you did not expect to see. Why do you think that is?
Music touches people in ways that are sometimes can't describe how it is. It just, I don't know of any culture that does not have music.
Right.
That's something very real about that. You start playing and people will show up.
That's true. That's very true. You hear the music. I know if you hear music playing outside, you're going to look and you might go down and check it out.
The second part of what I'm doing with the CCC, I'm putting together a professional ensemble, which would be a signature ensemble for the organization, a professional big band. And so that's another component that we need to raise money for. Because it's, you know, the sound of jazz. So I have a student group. I have a higher level professional group that those students can aspire to audition for and be a part of as well. But one that'll play on a very high professional level, you know, to be able to offer that as well.
Very nice.
And we're doing workshops. You know, we're doing workshops in colleges and universities and high schools, as well as in communities.
How can people go online and see you and listen to you online? You're seeing these sort of late night TV people and they have their bands in their own particular places and somehow they have the technology that they could bring it all together and somehow play together, which I find very interesting, but not everybody has that. You know, how can someone have the opportunity to hear you? You know, are you doing videos or do you plan to do them? I'm hoping.
Yeah, I'll be doing some videos, some live streaming. I have a YouTube site as well. We started a series. Now, actually, we did the first performance of a series. We called it Jazz from the Gallery.
Okay.
Wilfredo Morel gave us his gallery and then with a trio of myself, Jeff Barone and on guitar and Michael Getz on bass. We have an hour and change performance that we did there. And we're going to do this in different places and different galleries, indoor settings, and be able to have them streamed. Yeah, so that's all coming together. That information will go on my website, rayblue.com. It's not on there yet, but it will be.
So I think it's interesting that you're finding venues and then you bring your band in there and then you play in there alone and then you stream it. That's fantastic. And I'm glad that you came up and just you step up and think about it and using technology to put the message out. So you're learning to embrace technology as a musician. Is that something you'd advise other musicians to do?
For sure. I have to develop my skills in that area as well, or at least bring a team together that with those who have that skills can do that. You know, I don't know everything and I can't do everything by myself.
Okay, I'll help you. Don't worry.
Okay.
I think that you're going to be just fine. People seek you out and it's okay. You don't have to be modest about that because people that know that it's true. I know some of your fans that you wouldn't even know how much they love you and what you put out there. And I'll say this to the audience is that if you ever have the opportunity to see a performance of Ray Blue, take the opportunity. Don't shy away from it because you deliver. You know, walk into a room where you're playing, it's like obvious. I once saw you at a venue. You're so authentic.
Well, thank you, Tony.
And I have to thank you for being that way.
Well, thank you.
Because as you know, I interview a lot of people in a lot of different fields. Not everybody is as authentic. Most of them are. Otherwise, I wouldn't interview them. But you're just so authentic. And I appreciate that what you do for the community and on the fact that it's so diverse. You have a lot of people that revere you. Just keep doing it And when do you think that we'll be able to see you next?
Outside at the Bean Runner from 6 to 9. It's also my birthday gig.
What?
Yeah.
You're not having a birthday. You're too young to have a birthday. I know. I stopped having them. I said, enough of this. The last one was real good. I'm good. You know, I'm going to keep that age. I'm holding.
Since I have no control over that, I don't have the powers that you have.
Oh, but, okay. Well, I'll teach you how to do that.
August 15th, and all of the social distancing is going to be in place, and it's outside. If there's weather, the opportunity to be inside is there. There'll be fewer people. There'll be two shows, hour 15-minute show, then it'll clear. They'll disinfect and everything, and then they can bring the other for the second show.
I'm going to show up. I will show up. August 15th, that's the date.
Saturday, August 15th.
Saturday, August 15th in front of the Bean Runner Cafe.
Bring your mask. Make sure you have your mask and all, and you know, everything will be cool. Yeah, and the band will be cooking. It's my regular band. Mm-hmm. We're preparing to do another recording.
Oh.
The last recording, we made it as high as number 7 on the Jazz Week chart.
Nice.
We're working on a new one now. We'll be playing music from the new record there, too.
So everybody, show up, wear your mask, August 15th on Esther Street in front of the Bean Runner Cafe. Wear your mask, bring your hand sanitizer, and social distance. It'll be easy because it'll be outdoor, and listen to some great jazz and help Ray Blue celebrate his birthday.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's having a birthday and he's still young.
That's right.
And he has a way of making you feel young. Just show up to it. It'll be good, you know, and support the community during this time because we do have to get out.
And we need live music. We all need to be around live music. That opportunity is there.
Absolutely. And I thank the Bean Runner for making this possible as well. I'm going to say goodbye for now, okay? Because this is not the last interview. I wish you all the best, and I thank you so much for bringing art to the world. It's very important to bring the arts to the world because it's the one thing that, in my opinion, that draws us all together. It separates us from the animals, that we do have rhythm, we can sing a song, and we do appreciate music. What do they say? It soothes the savage beast in all of us, and we all have a little beast in us. And, you know, listen to music and come out and see Ray Blue. I'll thank you, Ray Blue, for coming to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much, and I really appreciate you indulging me for this during this time and shedding some inspiration on the planet just by talking about your experience and opening up for the audience. And I know that they appreciate it very much. And I'll say to the audience, thank you for coming to the Energy Stoners Cafe and listening to the great guests that I have. Next time, I promise to have another fantastic guest, and I wish everybody a good night. I'll say goodbye and bye for now, and I'll see you next time. Bye bye. Thank you for listening to the Energy Stoners Cafe.